sure if it's because I'm 29 and the looming reality of my 30s is coming straight on or what, but all of a sudden, I've started to care and look into health-related issues more than I ever have in my life. I'm reading ingredients. I'm thinking twice about certain things I'm doing or eating. And to be totally transparent, I'm also making some excuses and doing some bargaining so I can keep doing some not-so-good things in terms of my health and body. After the success of the Dr. Leah Gordon episode in season 2, where we discussed all things hormones, infertility, and birth control, I wanted to see if I could find another doctor to discuss, well, everything else. But I didn't want to be the only one asking the questions this time. So I asked Cute Servatives to submit questions about anything and everything that they'd want to ask a doctor. Yes, there are some additional birth control and period questions in this episode, but there are also great questions about detoxing, diet, exercise, nutrition, and certain prescription drugs like Adderall. Almost everyone I know takes it casually, but is it just legal meth? Also, how corrupt is the healthcare industry really? Answering listener-submitted questions today is, and this is in her own words, previously board-certified internal medicine hospitalist turned certified Gerson practitioner and functional medicine leader, Dr. Jess Petras on The Spillover. Okay, Dr. Jess, the doctor is in. When you talk about wanting people to become their own doctor, what do you mean by that? Or their own best doctor?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. So I really feel like the doctor of the future is going to be getting patients off of medicine and not putting them on. And I also feel like the doctor of the future is going to be listening to their patients as much as they are peer-reviewed studies. And so I feel like really, the doctor of the future is going to be us and the people, because you know your body better than any other professional out there. So people come to me all the time and say, my labs are normal. I don't feel normal. That is common. And then in those people, they're never wrong. Their body is never wrong. Our labs aren't sensitive enough. And so I truly feel that people can get educated. They can do their own research. They can understand their bodies. You don't need credentials behind your name to understand how your body works and what it needs.
Now, you started as a board certified internal medicine hospitalist. Is that right?
Correct.
And so that's someone who works with allopathic medicine. And then you became a functional MD. So what do both of those titles mean? And what are the differences between those two? Because I don't even know what any of that means.
So conventional medicine, I trained and became a regular medical doctor. I went through 4 years of medical school, 3 years of residency in internal medicine. I took my, 8-9 hour board exam and passed. And they called me board certified. After that, I went to work in a hospital where the emergency department would call me for all admissions except for surgery. So I had to know something about everything. That system's kind of started to crack for me when I really started to see problems with discharging patients on 30 different medications. And I decided I wanted to have better answers for people. And that led me down the course of functional medicine, which my definition is getting to the root cause, asking why until you can't ask why anymore. Why do you have high blood pressure? Why are you diabetic? Why do you have this autoimmune condition? And not just giving someone a lifetime supplement, herbal, antibiotic, medicine, whatever it is, until we've changed their lifestyle and gotten to the root cause of why they may be chronically ill, because a lot of it is preventable.
What would you say your areas of expertise are?
You know, I kept asking why until I couldn't ask why anymore. And what that led me to were environmental toxicities, things like industrial man-made toxins, plastics, pesticides, petroleum, things like that. And then the pathogens that are attracted to said toxicities, bacteria are the great decomposers of organic waste, and, mold eats bacteria. It's all an ecosystem. So Lyme disease, mold, parasites, environmental toxicities. And now, if you're going to do all that, you have to dabble in trauma because it's a root cause too. And so I consider all of that my specialty, actually.
So were you obsessed with that Chernobyl documentary?
Smidge. Yeah, man.
That's what I hear. And you're like, I'm into all these chemicals or whatever. Okay. So You spent over 5 years treating patients in a standard hospital setting. Is that correct?
Actually, over six.
Oh,
six
wow.
Years. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And so during that time, you started really seeing that the methods that hospitals use for commonly treating patients wasn't actually working for the patients. And so what did that look like? What sort of patient were you treating and what wasn't working for them?
Gosh, you know, I treated most chronically ill patients that came in the hospital. So it could be anything from, you know, a diabetic coma to an overdose on, you know, drugs to, you know, someone who's septic with an infection and needed to be put in the ICU. So I saw all various myriad of patients throughout my, you know, almost 7 years, 6 years at the hospital. And over that time, there started to be cracks in the system for me. And that
like
was
what?
because, you know, I started to see, like I mentioned, patients discharged on 30 different medications. One example that comes to my mind was a patient that came in on a proton pump inhibitor, Prevacid, for 6 years, 7 years. And the package insert clearly said 6 months to 1 year. The patient should be on that. And so I started asking questions, you know, why aren't we talking to this patient about lifestyle or diet? And I wrote in the chart that they had been on that medication that long, which prompted their outpatient primary care doctor to call my team and complain about me. And so I was labeled a disruptive physician for some of those reasons.
What is that? That sounds really scary. Is that something that goes on like a permanent doctor record? She's disruptive. what is that? Like won't go with the narrative?
Yeah. You know, you're kind of, I would say, blacklisted by your peers in the hospital. You know, they thought I was crazy. I was down in the hospital or cafeteria every day complaining about why are you feeding pesticide ridden food and this processed dairy and processed sugar to these cancer patients. And they would say things like, you know, we know the hospital system is messed up and we have Pepsi and Coke contracts in the hospital. We know it's a business. We know, but we're mandated to follow the food pyramid.
You know, now that you bring that up, I feel like every hospital I've been in has a McDonald's.
Yeah, the Children's Hospital in Louisville, where I trained for years, had a McDonald's.
That's what I was thinking of. I'm from Southern Indiana, so I grew up going.
Oh, I see you.
Cozair.
Yeah, I see you. I went to residency in med school at University of Louisville.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea. That's crazy. Okay, so then was all of this kind of what ended up leading to you wanting to do a total 180 in your career?
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you. I started just kind of reading things outside of my normal belief system. I started just reading alternative things because I wasn't happy with the answers I was getting for people in the frequent flyers I kept seeing being admitted in the hospital without root cause answers. So yeah, it was a big journey for me, actually. It's.
Do you ever get called anti-medicine, anti-doctor, anti-vaccine? And then if so, how do you respond to people who want to give you one of those labels?
You know, labels are a problem. And yeah, absolutely. I've been called many of those terms, probably more than once. And it's okay. You know, you have to kind of thick skin because the world right now is really tough. People are really polarized and divided. And when that happens, you know, I say, you know, I may have a bias or a certain belief towards one way and think there might be better ways to do things. But for example, conventional medicine versus integrative functional root cause medicine, they're apples and oranges. If I broke my leg, I would still go to the emergency department. If I turned up septic and needed fluids and antibiotics, I would still go to the emergency department. Thank goodness for that. But to prevent a lot of other things, I'd rather start before that and catch people before they're that sick. And that's root cause medicine. That's the difference in the term. So when people call me anti-medicine, that's my answer for them. It's two different things used for two different purposes. And you know, if they're going to call me anti-vax, I say things like, you know, no blanket medicine is good for everyone. Everyone is unique and bio-individual and needs to be evaluated on that basis.
That's a really good answer, actually. What do you think healthcare professionals, meaning doctors, nurses, pharmacists even, are most afraid to speak out against these days?
You know, the ones still left in the system, I think, are really afraid to speak on the COVID narrative and what they see. I also think that we've seen so many things happen if you're a hospital physician or nurse We've seen so many things happen over the years, like patients get transferred to a secondary hospital because their insurance doesn't cover certain things. And we've all become a little thick-skinned to things that aren't quite as empathetic as they should be in medicine. And I think they're scared to speak out about vaccine reactions, about the COVID narrative, about maybe there's a better way to do certain things. And I think the ones that are seeing the truth, it's really hard for them to stand in integrity and stay in a job they maybe don't always agree with or aren't aligned with.
Yeah. Did you treat patients during the last 2 years of COVID?
Yes, I wasn't in the hospital. And I was in the outpatient setting, working at a clinic. And I actually did see quite a few vaccine reactions and long haulers as well over the last 2 years.
How did the pandemic and lockdowns kind of change your approach to treating patients? And also, what differences did you notice about patients before the pandemic compared to now?
Gosh, you know, the world I'm in, I'm seeing a lot of people who aren't believed in mainstream conventional medicine, right? So they're still searching someone with a mainstream conventionally trained background like myself, but someone who will believe them and listen to them. Mm-hmm. And that's not a lot of medical doctors. And so for that reason, I saw a lot of long haulers and messenger RNA vaccine reactions, which I still consider rather experimental in my opinion. How did I treat people differently? Gosh, you know, these people present with things like chronic fatigue, looking syndrome, mast cell histamine issues, reactivated Epstein-Barr virus. So I'm seeing a lot of that. And the root cause of these people with long haulers is a lack of nitric oxide. So things that help them produce nitric oxide, lifestyle changes that help their mitochondria produce energy or ATP, which is a big problem as well in people who have severe COVID or long haulers. And so for me, really, I just treat them with respect. I listen to them. I tell them it's not going to be a short-term fix. And then I try and do it as holistically as I can, because a lot of these people are kind of, they have a little PTSD from some of the treatment they've gotten.
Oh, I can imagine. Do you think that hospitals more often than not have a patient's best interest at heart, or now do you feel like it is becoming all about the money?
Oh man, you know, the people who work in the hospital, the doctors I worked with and nurses I worked with, they're good people. They have good intentions. They want to help people. And I truly believe that most of the people that work in the hospital do have good intentions and they mean well. Now, the hospital bureaucrats, the suits, the people who aren't one-on-one with the patients, I think they are looking more at numbers.
Yeah, and I think that's fair.
Yeah, and I think the administrators are the ones who make the decisions. You know, the doctors are not in control anymore. They're really following hospital protocols, which is a lot of cookbook medicine sometimes, and they're really controlled by hospital suits and bureaucrats. They do not control things in the hospital or decisions.
I think about, you know, all of the acute servatives listening who might be in medical school or wanting to go to medical school to be a doctor, but they hear you saying things like, I don't really feel like doctors have any control anymore, and that might scare them out of wanting to become a doctor. What would you say to them?
Yeah, you know, I'm so sorry. You know, these are things I wish people had told me when I was applying. You know, back in the day, I was at the transition zone when doctors owned their own groups and they did have control in the hospital because they were independently owned. But now all of them can't do that. They're too busy. And so they're being bought out by hospitals. And when they're bought out by hospitals, they are controlled by bureaucrats. You know, really the way to stand on your own is to own your own clinic and do outpatient work. But honestly, I definitely, the boards still are very controlled by certain narratives. And I think that things are changing quickly with what happened with COVID. And so I would encourage people to really do your research. I'm not saying it's not for you, but you really have to understand that they are going to control your thinking for 4 years.
What are some major diseases that would blow people's minds that you've come across and actually been able to help without pharmaceutical drugs?
Absolutely. Hashimoto's thyroiditis or Hashimoto's hypothyroidism is one of them. Lupus as well. So I've reversed an ANA before in lupus or anti-nuclear antibody that you often find positive in an autoimmune disease like lupus. Let's see, chronic Lyme disease. There are a lot of doctors out there who don't believe in that, but chronic Lyme disease is the great mimicker and can often mimic things like fibromyalgia, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis. So these things can be corrected. Cancer is another one of them, holistically as well. I'm trained in Gerson therapy, and I don't always follow their exact protocol, but some of their techniques and hallmarks have really helped me in detoxification of some of these sicker patients. Let's see, mold illness is a root cause that can look a lot like, it can be a root cause for sarcoidosis, lupus as well, and some other of the autoimmune conditions. So there are some things that if you know what root causes are, and you know what causes some things that can trigger autoimmunity, parasites, mold, Lyme disease, then you can often help people go into remission or truly heal what ails them by asking the right questions and knowing what the root cause is.
Well, I asked Dr. Jess Keat Servetus, if you could ask a doctor anything, what would you want to ask? And so for the rest of our time together, I'm going to just rapid fire through a bunch of random topics and questions that were sent in by listeners. And look, there's no filter. Some of this stuff made me laugh out loud. Some of it's really deep and philosophical. And some of it is literally like, what would you say about my mold? No, I'm just kidding. But I mean, kind of.
I can't wait. Okay.
Awesome. Okay. So the first one, and a lot of people ask this, and I know that listening to you just talk even in these first few minutes, they're like, oh my gosh, I wish so badly that wherever I live, I could have a doctor like Dr. Jess who would believe me, what you talked about, like feeling believed. How can people find a good doctor? How can they test them out or find someone that is going to believe them and not just abide by some, you know, bureaucratic narrative?
Gosh, there's not a simple, you know, question or answer and solution to this for people. There are a few directories that are really helpful, like the Institute of Functional Medicine, which I trained in as well. So they do have some really great practitioners there. But again, not every practitioner is created equal. Not every practitioner is for you if you're out there listening. And so the best thing I can say to you is look at some of the, you know, FDN, Institute of Functional Medicine. A lot of those websites for integrative functional doctors, you can even Google in your area to find out. And, you know, when you're on that, you know, 15-minute initial consult, maybe to check out to see if this doc is made for you, really do an internal gut check and see if this person makes you feel good. If you got off that call feeling like you had hope, that is important for a practitioner. So just because they're integrative or functional or maybe a naturopathic doctor or whatnot, they're great too. You know, it, just because you may have somebody like that, they still may not make you feel great and they may not have the answers for you. So the most important thing for you guys out there to do is know yourself and know what you're looking for.
All right. So let's talk periods. Sure. These are some questions about menstrual cycle. Okay. So this person wants to know, why is PMS actually not normal? And what is normal for women in the days leading up to their periods?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's normal. It's common, but it's not normal. That person is correct. I would agree with that statement. And so premenstrual syndrome is due to usually an estrogen dominance or a lot of prostaglandin release, which is an inflammatory cytokine. And really, if you have a lot of inflammation in your body, a little more inflammation, you may feel that every month. And then having a hormonal imbalance, something like too much estrogen or too little progesterone can cause a lot of pain, swelling, puffiness, moodiness, all that stuff for women. And so even pathogenic invasions. I've seen parasites cause a lot of pain during monthly cycles, especially something like strongyloides. Really bad PMS for women. I've seen living in a water damaged home where there's endotoxic bacteria growing or mold growing can cause an estrogen dominance. In fact, one strain of mold called zearalenone, it's a mycotoxin produced by the mold Fusarium, is a known estrogen mimicker and causes absolute estrogen dominance. Another one is something like Lyme disease, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Some of these pathogens can really drive hormones out of whack as well. And so there's hormones aren't root cause. They're sort of the body's way of signaling there's something else that's off. They're chemical communicators that say something deeper is off.
How do you stop severe menstrual cramping?
Hmm. So you kind of have to know the root cause of it, like the previous person asked. But let's just pretend it's something like an estrogen dominance or too little progesterone, because the body works in checks and balances. So it wants things even. So either one of those being off can cause similar symptoms. So, you know, ask your doc, but something like Chasteberry Tree, Vitax, Dong Quai, Sweet Yam, all of these things help us to naturally produce progesterone and to lower estrogen. There are other things like Cypress rotundus, which is an herb that is a natural estrogen blocker. So sometimes estrogens can be high because we have a lot of chemicals out there that mimic estrogen, you know, pesticides, flame retardants, parabens. These are found in a household, you know, cleaners and makeup and everything. So if you have those in your body, you're probably going to have painful periods. So look into some natural herbs that can fix them like that if you have the right recipe.
What could be the cause of recurring yeast infections after your period?
Oh, okay. So yours is definitely hormonal related, and you probably have some overgrowth of candida. That's one way we know, is because women keep getting recurrent vaginal candidal infections. And especially if you've had it tested and it's grown something like candida albicans, which is yeast. Really annoying to have that every month. So a parasite cleanse really can be helpful. Candida cleanse can be helpful. Things like borax, they even make vitamin C suppositories. They make ozonated oil suppositories. They're wonderful for things like this that actually go right in the problem of concern. You also probably want to talk to your doctor and make sure you're not living in a water damaged house, because mold is the big gun and yeast is kind of like its dirty little cousin, but they hang out like they hang out like frenemies. So if you have one, sometimes you have the other.
That is hilarious. I love that. Okay. This is so funny. When I read this, I did. This is one of those questions that I laughed out loud. She says, "What in the damn hell actually counts as the first or last day of my cycle?"
Oh, the what in the damn hell? She sounds Southern. I like it.
Oh yeah,
yeah, for sure. So the first day of your cycle is the first day you start bleeding.
And that is that any, because, okay, and I know that my male producers are going to be, they're going to be freaking out me saying this, but like, does that mean the first day of your cycle, even like a little bit of that like brown, crusty blood, like not your full blown period, it could just be the little bit of like browner discharge?
Yeah, absolutely. And that can even get, you know, lighter and lighter as you get older. That's a pretty normal progression.
Okay, yeah, so that would be the first start.
They're like,
oh yeah, they are. They're going, my ears are bleeding. So that would be the first start of your period then, your cycle, I should say.
Correct. Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And then the last day is the day before you start bleeding again.
Okay. All right. Is there a breakdown to track ovulation?
Absolutely. There's like family planning fertility trackers that are really useful. Some of the ways people even use fertility trackers to not get pregnant too. So they're actually pretty accurate, because your body temperature spikes right at ovulation. So that's how we know when women are fertile.
Okay. So moving on to hormones, fertility, and childbirth questions. What causes hormone imbalance? Could it be both natural causes and unnatural? And how can women improve their imbalance without using substances like birth control?
Yeah, absolutely. Birth control actually is my last-ditch effort for women. You know, in severe cases of endometriosis and things, sometimes people need something like that. But the cause of hormonal imbalance, as I mentioned before, can be things like xenobiotics, xenoestrogens. These are things that bind to estrogen receptors in the body, and they fool our body. They mimic estrogen, and they can be found in makeup products, household cleaners, laundry detergents, dry cleaning products, pesticides. I mean, they're all over, unfortunately. They're pretty unavoidable. They're even found in foods. And so there's people who are sensitive, maybe their livers, they don't have great methylation. Their phases of their liver are a little stagnant. They may have trouble getting rid of some of these toxicities, environmental toxicities. Another reason things can happen are pathogens, which I mentioned, and then stress. Childhood trauma, continued stress can really drive cortisol up, which is definitely connected to our sex hormones and made in the same pathway. So, you know, even mitochondrial damage, which is mitochondria makes ATP and energy, Some of our sex hormones are made in the mitochondria of the adrenal glands. And so all of these things, multifactorial reasons that people can have hormonal imbalances, and birth control really, it doesn't fix it. It just band-aids it.
Right.
So, right. That's really what it does. And so if you really want to get to the root cause, I would look into getting a Dutch test, which is a urine and saliva test to look at your hormones. It indirectly looks at the thyroid, liver, and directly looks at the adrenals. And this really will help you know kind of what balance of herbs will be right for you. You may need herbs that lower estrogen. You may need herbs that increase progesterone. You may need, a detox for environmental toxins.
Are there any replacements for hormonal birth control that actually work? This person wants to know.
Hormonal birth control. So I wonder if this person is pre or postmenopausal. It sounds like they're premenopausal. So you mean, so things that actually keep you from getting pregnant?
I think that's what they mean. Yeah.
Yes. I think that's what they're saying. So you know what I use? I use the Daisy Fertility Monitor, and it actually is, you just have to be kind of proactive and diligent because it's a thermometer that you stick in your mouth before you get out of bed in the morning. So your body temperature is the same and standardized every morning. And it gives you a green light when you're not fertile and a red light when you are. And so that's kind of a nice way to look, to track. I don't know. I'd have to look at the statistics to see what it is compared to birth control, but I believe it is above 90% accurate.
Okay. And so I just want to put this in like major basic terminology. So when you talk about the red light and the green light, you are or are not fertile. Essentially, you're saying these are days that if you're having sex, your partner could ejaculate inside of you and you're good. You probably will not get pregnant. And then other times you probably need to do the pull out method along with tracking your cycle.
Correct.
Okay.
Exactly. Exactly.
What is an IUD's effect on fertility?
Oof. So intrauterine device or IUD. Unfortunately, I had one back in like 2014. I had the Mirena, which is a hormone releasing IUD. And I did not do well with it. I had it a year. When they pulled that sucker out, I went to perimenopause and was nice. I was hot flashing and night sweating.
Wow.
It was terrible. And I definitely think there is a cancer risk with that thing. I would not recommend it. Definitely causes aging skin as well for me.
And that's aging just my skin.
Problem. Oh yeah. Like cystic bumps and acne and aging skin for sure. Because what it's doing is releasing, it's telling your body to not produce progesterone. It's releasing its own, but you have the receptors all over your body, not just in your uterus. So it's really not natural. The other option for an IUD is Paragard, which is a copper releasing IUD. I do believe this one is a bit safer. If I had to choose, I would go with this one. However, there have been, risk of, copper toxicity from this in some women.
Do you think you need doctor intervention if you've never had a consistent period in your life?
Yeah, that's something that if you've tried some of things, you've kind of read online and played, Dr. Google and you can't figure it out. It's definitely something you've been unsuccessful that you may want to check out with a one-on-one practitioner or doctor that resonates with you to see what's going on. Especially, if you're of age and you should have started, there's something else that's not right.
How early on should you test fertility levels?
Gosh, for me, for example, I'm 43 and I have never tested fertility levels before, right? So until recently. So I think most people don't actually do that until they're thinking about trying to conceive. And really there's a number of different ways you can do that. Some primary care doctors and functional docs would feel comfortable testing some levels for you and some inflammation markers for you, something like anti-malarian hormone, which can be low in a lot of women who can't conceive. Mm-hmm. Like I could do that, right? But then if you guys wanted to go into a further investigation and, actually could do some more invasive things to see what's wrong, then you might want to see like a reproductive endocrinologist or someone too.
Do you think it's beneficial to get fertility testing done, way before you're thinking about having kids? So if there is problems, you kind of have that in your mind before wanting to start having kids?
Yes and no. If you have a good reason for thinking there's a problem or, you may want to check that. But I also really, truly believe in the power of the mind. And if it's something that you're going to hold on to and worry, 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 worry about, that's not going to probably serve your best interests either way. So you have to kind of know yourself and what's best for you again.
Do you have any advice on how to not poop when you push out a baby?
Oh my gosh, you guys, that's so funny. I think if you're constipated, that can pretty much do it. And then natural birth, honestly, is probably the best advice because you can feel everything down there. When they
Oh.
numb you up with an epidural, you're not really sure where you're pushing.
That is a really good point. That seems like kind of like duh, no brainer that I didn't even think about. Like, of course. That's a
Yeah.
really good one. Is tap water super dangerous? Like, it will maybe give you cancer level dangerous?
You know, for sure, I definitely did a podcast yesterday about how aluminum is in the tap water and related to neurodegenerative conditions like Alzheimer's. I personally call tap water infertility water, just so you guys know, since we're talking about fertility, it's my joke, my inside joke. It's infertility water. I also, among doctors, we have nerdy doctor jokes, and we call it radiation water
Oh my
because
gosh.
that's where radiation is. There are certain parts in the US that just contain radiation in the soil, in the core, and it's in the water. And so you have to kind of know what's in your water. So for you guys who don't know, check out the Environmental Working Group's water database. You can put in your zip code. It'll scare the heck out of you about like 13 different things that are not supposed to be in your water, but they definitely are. But if you want to get H. pylori, parasites, possibly radiation, and lots of different drugs, even medications, birth control pills, drink tap water.
Dude, that is like holy Erin Brockovich, okay? Like that is freaky.
Exactly.
That is freaky. So is the fill is the water that comes out of that filter in your fridge just really as bad?
It may have a slight, a little pre-filter in it, but honestly, those Brita filters, those water filters in the fridge, they don't do very much. And yes, Erin Brockovich was right about the hexavalent chromium. It's in the water too.
Okay, well that does it. Very
Sorry, guys.
comforting.
Get a good water filter. I get you a reverse osmosis, which removes everything and add electrolytes back, or get you something like a distiller,
A water
or
softener?
yeah, I mean, that helps a little bit, yes.
Okay.
But we need something even better to get, remove things, impurities in the water these days.
It's that time of the month. You're in a pickle. You need something that is not only healthy for you, but is made just for you. Yes, all you women, no men allowed in Period Town. And no politics either. Why? Garnier is one of the only tampon brands out there that doesn't support Planned Parenthood or abortion. They are 100% real girls only, and their tampons are 100% organic. Whether you're someone who prefers tampons or cups, Garnier has got you covered in more ways than one. Not gonna lie, I was a little nervous to try a new tampon brand. After all, I have used the same brand since I started my period. So, since I was 12, that's a long-term relationship, maybe my longest ever. But Garnier's 100% organic tampons were easy to use with their plastic applicator, better for my body, and I did not experience any leakage. They offer light flow and heavy flow tampons so you can get exactly what you need or subscribe to a box that gives you both, like I do. Plus, for every purchase, they fight human trafficking for girls in Nepal. Really neat bonus, the word Garnu means rescue in Nepali. Join the Girls Only Club by going to garnu.com/Alex and use code Alex to receive your first month free of organic tampons when you sign up for the monthly subscription, exclusively for Spillover listeners. That's garnuu.com/Alex and use code Alex. Well, what about microwaves? So I personally, fun fact about me, do not use microwaves except for like popcorn or chicken noodle soup. I am very freaked out by them. This has been something since I was like a teenager. I don't use them. I mean, is there anything to be said with that, or am I just crazy?
So the science will tell you no, but I don't use mine either because it's just sort of an intuitive hit.
Right.
And I at this point in my life, there are certain things that I just trust myself on,
Yeah, I get
right?
freaked out about the microwave and I get freaked out about Bluetooth and AirPods.
So absolutely. There is absolute science on Wi-Fi and AirPods. And you got to think about it. There's invisible frequencies that are definitely still there that we can't see. We can't see sun rays. We can't see, you know, radio waves. They're still there. And so are things like AirPods. When you put them in your ears without wires and they're wireless, you have a frequency bouncing back and forth across your brain the entire time they're there. And there's definite science that Wi-Fi has ill effects.
The headphones that come on the string, I've been telling them, those are back, baby. Just use those, is what I've been telling the girls. Why are there so many infertility spikes, it seems, recently with young women?
Oh, man, this is such a loaded question. The COVID vaccine. Yes.
She's saying what we're not supposed to say. Yeah.
I'm going to say it because it's truthful. And I'm going to say what's truthful. The science is showing that it is changing women's periods. My own personal mother couldn't speak, comprehend, or read for 3 weeks after my dad lied to us and got the first Pfizer vaccine.
Oh, my gosh. So she didn't even get it. It was your dad and it affected her.
Correct. She's completely back to normal after 3 weeks. I took her to the Amen Clinic, which is one of the most renowned neurologic clinics in the country, to see what was wrong because it was that severe. So I have also the membership in a community forum where I have over 10,000 posts on it since last year. And I listen to the people on there that talk about how their cycles are interrupted, how their brain fog and the dizziness, and they have all these symptoms after they got the vaccine or they're around their vaccinated loved ones. Sometimes I gaslight lit people at first and said, that's not science. This isn't a live virus vaccine. It can't shed. But this is a new procedure. And to pretend that we know everything about the mechanism of action is just stupid.
Well, and here's what I think is just so hard for some people is that we're told by these big pharmaceutical companies, you know, there is no evidence to suggest that these vaccines are affecting women's fertility. But exactly what you're saying, and I could say the same thing, not only just the COVID vaccine, but also with hormonal birth control. If you post a thread on social media asking, what are your symptoms of, you know, taking hormonal birth control, for example, you will get thousands of female comments saying it made me sick. This was happening, you know, extreme headaches or nausea or suicidal thoughts or whatever, all these different things. Same thing, you know, I had extreme high blood pressure, heart issues, all this different stuff, headaches, fainting with the COVID vaccine. It's like we have these people telling us, well, there's no evidence to suggest, but I'm looking at comment threads and there's thousands of people and they're saying, well, here's my evidence. I experienced this. What are we supposed to believe there?
You know, I am going to always believe the soul in front of me over a peer-reviewed paper. Always. I made that mistake for 7 years of my life and I won't do it again. Unless someone is diagnosed mentally handicapped or ill and they can't talk to me in a proper storyline, I'm going to believe people. And, you know, I've seen too many people say that to not believe them. I've seen so many people say the same thing about birth control that you just said. And I used to not believe them until it happened to me. And then it happened to my family with a vaccine. And now the studies are starting to show, if you've been watching the FOIA release from Pfizer.
That's right.
They're showing spontaneous abortions in the majority of women who did not know they were pregnant. And they knew. And so there is a problem with clotting and clotting cascades with the vaccine, just like there is with the virus in people. And so I'm seeing a lot of infertility issues because the spike protein in the studies has shown not to stay at the site of injection. It does go to things like the ovaries and the testes and the reproductive organs, where it continues to be a cause of inflammation in the body. And if you look at Dr. Ryan Cole's work, who's a pathologist, he looks at histologic slides of tissues all day long, and he has noted a greater increase in uterine cancer, 300% increase since the vaccine's rollout. And so what does this mean? We need further studies before we push it on everyone. Why are other people having infertility issues? Mitochondrial damage from toxicities. Our mitochondria have DNA too, However, they don't have the same repair mechanisms as our regular DNA. So once they're injured, they can't repair like our regular DNA. And then you need a lot, you have a lot of mitochondria and oocytes, the egg cells and the ovaries, a lot.
What is your advice for young women who are not in a stage of their life where they're ready for motherhood? Maybe they're not married yet, et cetera. They haven't found the right person, but they know definitely without a doubt that eventually they do want to become a mom. What is the best things that what are the best things that we could be doing for our bodies to prepare them for motherhood eventually?
I love that question. Honestly, like I could probably do a whole course on just that. Really detoxing, taking care and healing your any sort of childhood trauma that you've been avoiding, digging into that shadow side and really healing any sort of stuck in flight or fight or distracting yourself all the time, not to think about the trauma you may have sustained over your life, really balancing the body and the difference between rest and digest and flight or fight, detoxing things like environmental toxins we've talked about, moving out of your water damaged home where you have an exposure that can damage your DNA, really looking at any sort of toxic relationships you have. All of these things are helping your body to prepare to feel safe for pregnancy, because there's so many people who can't get pregnant because they don't feel safe, and your body is not going to let you get pregnant if it doesn't feel safe already. And so that's a big one with people. You really want to get your diet right. Cut out toxic processed standard American diet food. Move your body. Sweat every day, but not too much to where you're stressed out. You're doing high intensity exercises every day. You really want a balance in life of things. And that's really going to help you be happy and healthy, and it will help you prepare for a baby.
This is like a complete side note, and you may have absolutely no idea, but just you talking about how living in a water damaged home can just be so detrimental to your health. I wonder, you know, about people, for example, that are living in homes that, you know, went through Hurricane Katrina.
There's studies. When I've done lectures, I found studies. They've looked at the indoor mold concentrations in people who have lived in Louisiana, the New Orleans during that time. There's actually studies on it that show the higher mold concentrations in Texas last couple years with all the flooding.
Oh,
down
yeah,
there.
In Houston.
Same thing. Yep, same thing.
Oh, that is so fascinating. Yeah, see, these are like side conversations that I could sit and listen to for 45 minutes, but I have to keep getting through their questions. Okay, this person wants to know, what is the best way to get your body off birth control?
So you don't have to wean off birth control. You can literally stop it, but there are some women who actually need it for pain, right? And they're almost reeling just thinking about not being on it for the month, right? So it's really hard to test your hormones when you're on birth control, right? Because they're kind of abnormally skewed because you're taking something exogenously that doesn't normally belong in the body. And so if you haven't ever tested your hormones, it's kind of hard for me to know what's going to happen when you come off of them. But you would not believe how easy it is for herbs to fix your hormones when you have the right recipe. There's something.
So what is this, like a tea you drink or something?
Yeah, there's like, for instance, there's something made by Vitanica called PMS Tonic that's amazing. There's a product called Estro made by Cellcore Biosciences for an estrogen dominance.
Now, can you mix this into your Dr. Pepper, Dr. Jess? That's what I would like to know.
Well, you know, I'm going to say no high fructose corn syrup with that
no!
Dr. Pepper. But ladies, if you're having PMS and you haven't refined your diet, that alone can fix your PMS. So like if you remove dairy, processed sugar, gluten, you eat only wild caught fish, grass fed meat, you know, rice, quinoa, and just as organic as you can, fruits and vegetables, you're really going to notice that your cycle is not as bad and not as painful because the inflammation in your body is lower.
Well, if we took all that out of my diet, I would have nothing to eat. I always tell people I am the fattest, skinny person you'll ever meet. My insides are probably rotten tar because I have the worst diet. I am very thin naturally. I've been basically the same size my entire life. So I thank God for that. I just got really lucky in that department. But I have the worst, worst diet. So that's a whole nother thing. I really should have a nutritionist on sometime to just go through what I eat.
Oh, my gosh. You could have fooled me, though. That's amazing.
It's pretty wild. Okay, so I don't even know what this is, but somebody wants to know, at what point should I see an endocrinologist? What is an endocrinologist?
You said that correctly. Good job. So an endocrinologist is basically a doctor that looks at the glands in our body, and they look at a lot of basically autoimmune conditions. So diabetes, you know, anything with the thyroid, Hashimoto's, Graves' disease. So they basically look at a lot of autoimmune conditions. I'm assuming this person has a regular doctor that would refer them to an endocrinologist. So if you feel like your regular doctor or practitioner, whoever you're seeing, is not doing the tests you need or answering your questions properly, it's definitely time to find someone else. And I would encourage you, this is a hard find, and maybe you need to see someone virtually, but a functional endocrinologist.
Is that safe to do these virtual doctors things? It kind of skeeves me out.
You can with something like this. It's really great to get a second opinion from someone like that, because they can help you with lifestyle changes, and that makes a big difference with autoimmune conditions.
All right, last question in the fertility, hormones, childbirth section. Why is one side of my body hairier than the other?
Oh my goodness. That's so funny. Usually what comes to mind with this, I have to say, I do not know on this one, but I will tell you what my intuitive hit is on this really quickly.
Tell us.
Is that for some reason you're having circulation problems, and on one side of the body, you may be getting a little bit better blood supply or lymph movement on that side.
Okay.
You have lymph ducts that drain, and they are in indirect communication with the blood supply as well. But, you know, you have each one duct drains the head and one duct drains the body from the lymph. And so if you're kind of stagnant in one of those pathways, you may actually see a little more swelling, a little more hair growth, a little more circulation or whatnot on one side.
That's very interesting. Okay, prescription drugs and psychiatric care. One of your articles stated that close to 10% of the U.S. adult population takes powerful prescription drugs that treat mood disorders. In your experience, what are these powerful drugs actually doing to people?
You know, for instance, well, I can tell you the obvious one right off the top of my bat. Benzodiazepines, lovingly known as benzos, are things like Klonopin, Xanax. You know, most people have heard of these drugs, and they're really dangerous. If they have a very strong addictive quality because they work so well and so quickly. And then if one tries to come off of them too quickly, they can have seizures. And so that can be kind of scary. And those are pretty readily prescribed for a lot of people who have anxiety or can't sleep sometimes. The other drugs, things like Ambien, right?
Okay. So what are you going to say about Ambien? So I'll give a little bit of my own personal medical, history or stuff on here. I have been taking Ambien every single night for probably 3 to 4 years. Because I worked in morning radio for 7 years previously. And so I had to wake up at 4 a.m. and go to bed at like dinner time when the sun was still out. It was very, very hard for me to fall asleep. So I developed an Ambien dependency. My parents, every boyfriend I've ever had, my best friend always tells me that it freaks them out that I need to get off Ambien. I tell them I cannot sleep without it. And I don't experience, people have these Ambien horror stories where they're like jumping off buildings and driving cars and like really dangerous stuff, sticking their head in the oven, whatever. I mean, like we're joking, but like seriously, it's kind of scary. But I've never had a side effect like that. I go right to sleep. I wake up. I don't feel drowsy. It really works for me. So do you agree with my friends and family that I need to get off Ambien, or do you think it's okay?
It's definitely altering. It binds to a similar receptor, like an opiate receptor. It's like a cousin of the opiate receptor.
Oh, and so, no.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's that's why it's in the controlled substance category now. And so that's, I would ask what your root cause of not being able to sleep now is. It sounds like rebound insomnia from the drug. And so if you just have trouble going to sleep, herbals are really wonderful at putting people to sleep. They just have a really short half-life. So they're not great at keeping people asleep.
Okay, that I am like, I am so, I get really freaked out by the whole opioid industry. And so that like really is
no, for good reason. For good reason, but it's not an opiate. Don't worry.
Okay.
I was going to say opiates next, like Norco and OxyContin. You know, the Sackler family created, if you haven't watched that documentary, you guys should watch the documentary on the Sackler family, because it is really, really dirty what those people did. They went around and told people that, you know, less than 5% became addicted, or less than 1%, maybe, I can't remember now. And everyone gets addicted. And originally I'm from West Virginia. I went to school in Kentucky. So my friends have dropped dead from opiate overdoses. And it's not okay. There are way better ways to get rid of pain, way better ways. People's minds would be blown, and they'd be angry if they knew the alternatives that were safer.
Would you say that kids these days that are put on ADHD medication are being put on it for the wrong reasons? What would motivate healthcare professionals to prescribe something like Adderall to a young person without there being a valid medical reason?
Amen. Yeah, I can see the bias in that question. I agree with them. Yeah, things like Ritalin, Adderall, Strattera is legal speed. And is definitely peeing children's neurotransmitters in a certain way that's abnormal when they're still trying to develop that system. And, you know, neurotransmitters are an intimate connection with our gut-brain axis. So that's also helping to modulate their gut in ways that we don't really know yet. I think there are much better ways to look at root causes of why children have ADHD. Is it because kids aren't supposed to be sitting like they are in a classroom all day long? Is it because they're eating the standard American diet and full of sugar and chemicals and dyes? Dyes have definitely been connected, things like red number 40, to ADHD. How much screen time and EMF are they around? You know, there's lots of reasons. How much trauma have they sustained? Do you know how many ADHD cases I've reversed due to trauma? And child trauma stuck in the body. People who can't sit still have to keep themselves distracted because of trauma. So there are absolute reasons that should be explored before someone is put on a last-ditch effort medication like that.
I would say the majority of my friends or even acquaintances, and I am in my 20s, take Adderall, pop it like candy, like once in a while, like I just need to focus today, whatever. I try to tell them that I think Adderall is legal meth, and they think that I'm crazy. Is that a wrong categorization?
No, I mean, it's definitely not to be used that way. And it's definitely peeing their neurotransmitters in an abnormal way. And, you know, that's after a while, that's like a truck stuck in the mud. They're firing in a certain rut and they become chemically dependent on things like that. And really, we have an epidemic of things like chronic fatigue syndrome and brain fog. And the root cause reasons for why people are experiencing that need to be investigated, not band-aided.
Mm-hmm. What medication do you think is the biggest threat to American kids right now?
Huh. Man, that's hard. There's so many. I think a lot of the ADHD medications are a problem. I think putting kids on any chemical dependent medication for mental illness when they're below a preteen is not okay. It should be a last ditch effort.
What if like a child, I mean, really like under 10 is, you know, experiencing suicidal thoughts or ideations?
You know, I think that it's sort of abnormal for a child to feel that way. I will never believe it's just in their genes when something that happens. If our beloved pet ran under the bed and started snapping at us out of the blue, we wouldn't say, oh, put them on a drug. We would say they have an infection. What's wrong? And take them to get treated and evaluated for that. We need to treat people who change overnight or are too young for it to be normal, or is that ever normal, actually? You know, that needs to be evaluated in a different fashion, in my opinion. I'm not saying that it shouldn't happen ever, but the whole process of evaluation and the intake is too fast in conventional medicine. You're spending like 8 minutes with a patient, it should be an hour and a half. Mm. That's the problem.
Wow. We got rid of psychiatric care facilities, but now we have a mental health crisis. Do you think that we should bring back those institutions?
If Mental health in this country, in my opinion, is abysmal. If we brought it back with a whole new revolutionized system to treat people with community and herbs and diet and lifestyle, I think we would see a whole new world.
But see, I feel like it's weird because you have industries or institutions, I should say, like Big Pharma, who wants to prescribe away all these things. Then you have, you know, institutions like Big Food, who I feel like have an agenda and want to keep us kind of fat and unhealthy. What do you think about those and how they kind of contradict each other?
Yeah, well, you have the same people that are making the food, making the medications now. And so, you know, Monsanto was bought by Bayer. So Bayer Pharmacy is now making pesticides. Pesticides are being tested for on functional tests because we know they're endocrine disruptors and it causes neurodevelopmental issues and neurologic issues.
It's like everything is a business. I don't know who the hell to trust.
Yeah, I know. It's a shame. And so I think that you're going to see a lot of, I'm hoping that you're going to see a lot of physicians and doctors start to kind of wake up and see the connections and where the problem lies, because it's unethical for people to be making things that cause us to be ill and then making drugs that band-aid things that keep us alive, but really feeble and sickly.
Okay, so this is like, I don't know what this is, like a miscellaneous section, kind of. This person wants to know, how do you get a true evaluation of your health? Is it just through blood work?
No, in my opinion. Now, you can tell a lot from blood work, and most physicians look at just the high, if it's abnormal, high or low. What blood work should be used for is to look at trends. And really, you should look at things if they're trending downward, upward, not just in the high or low range, even if it's in the normal range. So you can tell a lot from blood work, but blood work that is going to elicit some solutions for people sometimes can get pretty expensive. I also really like urine test kits. Can tell us a lot about some of the functional labs we do are urine test kits. And stool kits as well can tell us a lot about the gut.
Okay.
So yeah, there's a lot of ways. Hair tests can tell us about heavy metals.
How do you take down a fever naturally?
So that's a great question. So this is going to sound really woo-woo, but you can put wet socks on the feet, cover them up with regular socks, and that'll draw the fever down. A lot of pediatric naturopaths do that with children. It works pretty well.
Okay, I was close because I thought you put a potato slice in your sock.
That too, or onions.
Really?
Yes.
You hear that, folks? I am not crazy. I said this and people are like, what are you talking about? I've never heard this.
Old wives tell, but it's seriously, try it.
I love it. I should be a doctor on the side. Okay. What is the kill bind sweat method and who do you recommend should use this method and why? What the heck is that? It sounds like a weird serial killer.
No, it sounds, no. I always thought it sounded like a weird S&M thing. So yeah. I accidentally hashtagged this on Instagram and it kind of caught on like wildfire. And so I ended up trademarking it as my protocol because it helps so many different things. So really the kill part of it is taking an herbal antimicrobial, something like Biocidin, or you can do oil of oregano, whatever you want, you know, waiting about 20 minutes and taking a binder, a toxin binder of your choice. This is something like activated charcoal, zeolite, bentonite clay, fulvic or humic acid. It's something molecularly sticky that pulls things out that don't belong there. So we're killing things, then mopping them up and binding them up and then sweating them out. And so studies have shown that some heavy metals, small studies have shown that some heavy metals can be excreted through sweat easier than feces or urine. And we know that flame retardants can be excreted that way as well. So if we believe that the accumulation of these toxins leads to disease, this is a nice way to work the natural drainage pathways in the body to release some of these toxicities.
Okay, here are some questions about the medical industry. Is it necessary when your child is first born to have a pediatrician? Or can you just kind of go by mother's instinct? Like, basically, I think what they're asking is, you know, is a pediatrician really just wanting you to come for all these recurring checkups because they want your baby on a vaccine schedule?
Correct. What is a well check visit? How abnormal, how crazy is that oxymoron of a word? If well equals, because vaccines equal health. Okay. I got like 15. Now childs have 72 before the age of 18 is recommended by the CDC. That's crazy.
Whoa.
That's another threat against children, that drug right there. So yeah, I question that, right? I don't really think about it, guys. How did the human race make it before pediatricians? Yeah. How do we make it before medical doctors in general, right? Like me, you know, how do we make it? The human race has survived on mother's intuition for years. You know, obviously, you know, I don't want to skirt anyone's, you know, pediatrician. Maybe you have a wonderful one and there are wonderful ones out there, but I want you to use your guidance about what you think is correct for your child.
Do doctors get financial kickbacks from vaccines?
Yes, I do. There has been, if there have been full certain number of practices vaccinated, then yes, there's like tax breaks and certain grants and things like that.
Are doctors paid differently if they see unvaxxed kids?
I don't think so. I don't know, because I'm not a pediatrician who ever gave vaccines to children.
How much of the treatment that you promote earns you a kickback as a doctor?
All right. Like in my practice, I don't practice.
Not necessarily you, just doctors in general, I think is what they're asking. Because they didn't know it was you who I was going to be talking to. I just said, if you could ask a doctor anything.
So no, back when I was in the day as a hospitalist in residency, big pharma and their reps could still come and buy us dinners and things like that. They've passed a law that can't happen anymore. So when I was in practice in the hospital paid me, but what kickbacks it got was blinded to me. I wasn't able to know that.
Okay. That's pretty juicy. That's pretty juicy. What should someone look for in extensive blood work?
Ooh, that's really great. So I'm going to give you guys the basics, a CMP, which will look at your white blood cells, your liver function, some of your electrolytes. CBC will include the white blood cells, the hemoglobin, the platelets. Just some inflammatory markers like ESR, CRP, ferritin. There's even hemoglobin A1C looks at your blood sugar and your way to utilize blood sugar over 3 months. I would say a full thyroid panel. If most docs will just do a thyroid stimulating hormone, which is a TSH, which doesn't tell me anything's actually bad science. The actual thyroid hormones are free T3 and free T4, which need to be checked, as well as antibodies, because I need to know whether you have an autoimmune condition or not going on, because treating it is two different ways.
Yeah.
So, you know, always ask your doc for a full thyroid panel if you're suffering from thyroid issues. Really. And then there's some other neat things you can look at in blood work, like your genes. You can look at some of your genotypes that way for mold disease. That can be important sometimes for docs like me. And really that's pretty much it right off the top of my head. There's a lot you can tell just from the idiosyncrasies and in that blood work. If you're a talented physician with an astute eye, there's a lot you can tease out just from that blood work right there.
How much of a problem, honestly, is the social justice initiative or woke agenda in the healthcare profession right now?
Yeah, it's really, this is the worst I've ever seen medicine and health riddled with politics. It's pretty bad. It's usually in the pro versus anti-vaccine division that I see in people right now. That's really where it's most ugly, in my opinion. And there definitely is an agenda towards certain tendencies in healthcare now. And I think there's a lot of bullying going on now if you don't agree with the mainstream agenda.
How important, Dr. Jess, and let's be honest here, how important is it that we go get a yearly checkup of any kind? Do we really have to do that?
Well, you know, if you guys don't know, you can really check your own labs through a website called Direct Labs. I have friends that do that all the time and then do their own research about how to read the labs. I wouldn't recommend that necessarily if you're someone, it depends on how ill you are. If you're totally healthy like me, I'm 43, I'm not on any drugs. All my labs are totally normal. So I don't have a yearly checkup, right? Wow. But I know a lot. you know, if you guys are pretty sickly, you have some chronic illnesses, you may want to look at labs and have someone look over them every year with you. You may want a physical exam to see. And that's really up to you and your preferences. But for someone like me, who's pretty healthy, who has good labs, I don't do that.
Okay, so let's go into nutrition and exercise, two things that are very foreign to me. What type of exercise is actually best?
Yeah, this is a great question. So I will tell you, a lot of the research is showing that high-intensity interval training is not great every single day, especially for women. Especially if you're someone that's on the go, 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 and you don't know how to be a human being, you're constantly a human doing, then you're just continually pinging yourself during workouts too. So some balance would be probably pretty nice for you. Things that would probably make you cringe, like yoga, or, you know, things like that, that are kind of calming. You need that in your workout if you're doing high intensity interval training, and vice versa. If you're always just doing slow parasympathetic breathing or yoga training, you might need some sprinting every now and then. And that's okay to keep the body on its toes. Muscular confusion really helps to make a body strong and also keeps us so we don't get tolerant of things. So I really like low impact secondary movement as well sometimes, and functional movement too. So whatever you're doing, whether it's weight training with heavy weights or light weights, you want to do things with intention, and you want to be sure to think about the muscle before you contract it. That'll make, you'll get double out of your workouts that way. But I would say mix it up and keep yourself balanced.
What really is the best detox?
Oh gosh, it's such a vague question.
Cleanse, I should say. The best detox cleanse.
Do they want actual supplements?
I don't know. Are those good, or are those the hype, like, overrated on supplements?
No. I mean, you know, I do a lot of detox through opening drainage pathways, just through extracurricular things. Things like, you know, for the lymph, dry brushing, regrounding, lymph massages, lymph node drainage. For, you know, this mitochondria, sweat pathway, infrared saunas. Or Epsom salt baths, you know, enemas, colon hydrotherapy if people are constipated, not going 2 to 3 times per day. There's lots of ways to open drainage pathways and detox without supplements. My favorite supplements to do so are Cellpore Biosciences. Their phase 1 is helping to open all the drainage pathways, the liver, the bile, the bowels, all that lymph, all that stuff. And phase 2 is the actual parasite and mold detox. So they give people a month to prep their bodies, which is what I try and do anyway.
Okay.
And then, you know, by the time you reach the second month, most people are ready to detox and they don't feel like they have the flu. So they still want to be friends with you.
What supplements do you think are actually worth the money? Like when we're talking fish oil or vitamin C or collagens?
Yeah. You know, I think, a really nice herbal tea is worth its weight in gold. I think that glutathione, if it's liposomal, is important. I think a really good killer, like, you know, something like Biocidin, something like Para-1, Para-2 by Cellcore Biosciences, Mimosa pudica, oil of oregano, cloves, wormwood. All of those are great combination of those, and some of the products I've just listed is really nice to have around too. And the product that I take every single day, and I think people should take every single day, is a binder, because it pulls out toxicities that don't belong in the body, which is why I think most people are sick.
This person wants to know, how do I fix disordered eating / losing weight as an emotional eater?
So there's probably some trauma behind your eating. So most of us put weight on because we're protecting ourselves. Mm. It could be, you know, something that happened to us, an affront, a sexual molestation even, could make us gain weight for protection. Even some trauma in childhood, maybe your parents said stuff when you ate something that you've, you know, not even realized. And usually there is even stress can make us overeat. We've all experienced that. Raise your hand, right?
Right.
So there's lots of different reasons that you could be overeating. It can even be boredom sometimes. But if you're having some emotional eating, some disordered eating, there's usually some reason that you're wanting to comfort yourself. And so that sort of needs to be teased out, because once you find the answer to that, you won't need to comfort yourself in ways that make you upset and make you shame yourself.
why don't most doctors take the, is it the ketogenic diet seriously or the carnivore diet seriously?
I think it's because they're so extreme, mm-hmm. right? I think that most doctors are looking for something sustainable for their clients and patients, something that we know you can follow long term. And keto is great for someone with brain issues. I mean, I've seen it really stop epilepsy and some seizure activity in its tracks because it's so great for the brain, but it's a really hard diet to follow strictly. And carnivore is too. It's right. You really can't have a lot of starchy vegetables or, you know, sweet anything. And, you know, that's great for a cleanse for certain people. And, you know, obviously if people are having food sensitivities or food allergies, cutting out whole food groups can really help them, you know, pause and their body to rebuild. But in general, those are going to be short-term diets because most people can't follow along hardcore.
I think it was in the last year that was the first time I had ever heard that essentially the food pyramid that I grew up learning about in school was a huge scam. That was that was just a crazy thing to experience. I'm like, what? I mean, I just had no idea. So what should a balanced diet actually look like?
Definitely not carbs is the bottom of the pyramid. Oh my gosh. So holy cow. I would say really for most people, you want it to look more paleo, whatever that sort of shape would be. I would say, you know, you want I don't think anything is wrong with wild caught fish or grass fed meat. I'm a big proponent. I think amino acids are super important, and muscle is the organ of longevity. So I would say you want mostly vegetables, leafy green vegetables, carrots, you know, root vegetables are super important, especially for getting rid of estrogen dominance. And so you really want lots of vegetables on your plate. You want some meat. And then you really want to cut down on a lot of starch. So I know that's everyone's favorite thing, but, you know, less potatoes, less rice, less any sort of wheat products, and more meat and vegetables, seafood, things like that are really, really healthy. I actually follow more of a paleo diet personally.
What sorts of vegetables do you think are the very best? I know you said root vegetables. Are there any others?
No, I mean, cruciferous vegetables, super important. I eat a lot of broccoli, Brussels sprouts, things like that. Carrots, they help to sweep the GI tract clean and are really great for keeping us regular. If you're constipated a lot, it can mean that you need extra fiber. I love, love, love any sort of green vegetable. Honestly, I love peppers. You can get most of your vitamin C is even higher in a red pepper than an orange.
Does it really matter if a vegetable is labeled organic?
It does. You know, certain vegetables, you could look at the Dirty Dozen versus the Clean 15. But really it does matter. And they do use organic pesticides sometimes. So it's really the best to know your farmer or grow it yourself. But really just keeping that vegetable soaked in apple cider vinegar can help a lot with the organic pesticides. And yeah, you guys, the less pesticides, the better on your food. You wouldn't believe how they're growing them now. And that's a lot for the body to have to detox every day, for sure. And something else I mentioned, forgot about, a perfect meal as well. You want a lot of healthy fats. So okay. A lot of healthy fats too.
All right. So here are some fun ones. Okay. This person says, why are my boobs uneven?
I mean, relatable, right? That's really common actually. The body just isn't always symmetric in the way it forms.
Right. Okay. This person says, I just want to clarify, I'm reading other people's questions, okay? This person says, I started getting BO so bad at age 22. Why? How do I fix it? I thought this was a teen thing.
So your lymphatic system is stagnant. The lymph is the sewer system of the body. It moves things out through the bowels. And if it's not able to come out of the bowels, it will come out the skin. Same thing with acne. So if you're having BO, one thing you can do is look into lymph massages and breath work. Ooh. The lymphatic system doesn't have a pump like the circulatory system does with the heart. It just has the diaphragm that helps it move. And how does the diaphragm move? It's a muscle that moves with breath. So really taking deep belly breaths, you're probably shallowly breathing. So your lymph is pretty stagnant and you probably need a little detox from environmental toxicities as well. Trauma is also stored in the lymphatic system. So you can see that's a problem for a lot of people. As a quick band-aid fix, you can do something with bentonite and zeolite clay. You can take it that and make a paste with some water and do a clay paste under the armpits and that will help you.
Okay. Are pap smears actually necessary if you are not sexually active or you're a virgin?
No, honestly, they're not. Unless you're having a problem like candida or something on its own, probably from diet or living in a water damaged home or something like that, then you really don't need that until you're sexually active.
Do you think that we have a cure for cancer, but Big Pharma does not want it to be known?
You know, Big Pharma plays this game. It's a very reactionary game that there's something happens, here's the drug to help it, but they don't look at the root cause that's originally causing it, causing the problem. For example, they put pink ribbons for breast cancer on Kentucky Fried Chicken and products that actually cause breast cancer.
What? Wait, Kentucky Fried Chicken causes breast cancer?
Oh gosh, yes, girl. There's
no.
The seed oils? Oh, yeah. Fried food? Oh, yeah.
I never should have done this episode. I'm learning too many things that are going to ruin my life.
Yeah, I know too much. I'm the party killer, seriously.
No more just popcorn kidding, no. Chicken for me. Okay, this has been amazing. Okay, one more question. Is it okay to crack your own back? I know you're not a chiropractor, but what do you think about that question?
Questions are so funny. You guys are so funny. Okay, so it depends. Are you cracking, like you're twisting and cracking? I definitely do that sometimes. And that's sort of a sign that you may need a chiropractor, a massage therapist, someone to kind of get into your body and see. Your pelvic bowl could be off. Your pelvis could be tilted one way or the other. Sometimes that can make our SI or sacroiliac joint in the back feel a little unstable, like we need to pop things. So it could be a clue that your body's warning you that you need an alignment.
So what I'm hearing from you is you don't think chiropractors are whack doctors.
No, not at all, actually. They've done a great service for me in the past. It's just, you know, I don't like the wham, bam, crack and done type of chiropractors, the ones who crack the neck. I like the ones who are more functional and look at the body, not just the bones, but the fascia and the connective tissue, too.
Okay, so for all the conservatives now who've listened to this episode, they're like, oh my gosh, I have learned more from you in, you know, an hour and 20 minutes or however long it's been than I have in my whole life seeing, you know, different family doctors or whatever. If somebody wants to actually use you for your services, where do you practice or how can people, you know, get in touch with you?
So, you know, after years of being in the hospital and then being an outpatient doc where I was spending an hour with each patient, you know, it was pretty draining and I was repeating myself every single consult because there's foundations that are important for every single person, right? So I decided to launch a membership where I was able to broadcast what I was saying in consults to a broader audience and use my time more wisely. So that's when we launched Wellness Plus in December 2020. It's wonderful. We have professional courses. I do a webinar for 2 hours every 2 weeks. We have root cause quickies. We have a community forum like Facebook that's uncensored with over 10,000 posts on it since we launched. It keeps me super busy. And then we have a store with vetted products and some of the supplements that I mentioned, like Cellcore Biosciences, and handholding with people through those protocols.
And so what is the website called?
It's app.drjessmd.com. So app.drjessmd.com. And then my regular website is drjessmd.com. I have a lot of free FAQs and how to kill blind sweat on there.
And what is your Instagram handle?
Sure. So it's Dr. Jess MD. So Dr. Jess MD. And then Dr. Jess MD on TikTok too.
I really feel empowered after doing this episode. I just want to tell you myself, just listening to some of this stuff, some of it's obviously hard for me to hear, but it does encourage me to be like, okay, I really do need to be in charge of my own health. And there's a lot of stuff that I need to be looking into, you know, as a young female adult woman. woman, especially someone who wants to be a mother one day. And I do need to be better about getting my health in order. So, and I'll look into the Ambien stuff that you brought up.
Yeah, for sure. I just want you to know, like, you can do whatever you want. We just have to find your right recipe and find where your roadblocks are to health. And really, you can, you know, people can learn to do this just by listening to your body. You're lucky enough to look good and feel good while still like living that life, girl. So that's rare. Good for you.
Well, people tell me it's going to catch up to me. So I'm just waiting on that shoe to drop. But thank you so much, Dr. Jess, for coming on The Spillover.
I'm so, so grateful to be on. You guys are awesome. Thank you.
Are we health freaks now? I'm definitely not. You think I'm voluntarily giving up my mini Dr. Peppers on ice with a straw over my dead body? I love my 23 flavored poison, but I did learn some new things from this episode, like how hospitals are businesses too, and that they have certain contracts with certain unhealthy brands so they can make money, not keep us healthy. And I was right about Adderall being sketch and not at all something we should be popping like candy. If you feel like you also learned something new today, show up by leaving a 5-star review. Next Thursday night at 9 p.m. Pacific and midnight Eastern, it will be another jaw-dropping personal story episode, and it won't be for little ears. Some of you might not even want to listen because of what it's about, but that would be a huge mistake because it involves God meeting and saving someone at their lowest of lows. And I mean lowest, as in doing and experiencing things for money that you and I couldn't even imagine. Watch every interview by subscribing to Poplitics on YouTube or The Spillover on Rumble. I'm Alex Clark, and this is The Spillover. Love you, mean it. Bye.